Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today we are going to be talking about a really great topic, losing weight. Wow. Everyone says, can't do it, been there, done that. Hey, I'm great. Didn't you see? I can do it. I conquered that. Many different ways to think about our weight, about our body image, how we got there, what we're struggling with, and how we can say, you know what, I'm just going to buy a bigger size up and I'm good to go. And is that really the answer? So today we'll be talking about how to look at your weight, your food intake, your relationship with food, and potentially you will see that this is your relationship with life, is by looking within. Now, what does that mean? Goodness, we all think about, oh, do I need a mental health counselor? What's going on here? Maybe a psychologist? Can't I just take some drugs for that and it'll fix it and we'll be all good to go? Well, maybe not. Today, my guest is Dr. Joseph Luciani. He is the author of Thin From Within, the powerful self-coaching program for permanent weight loss he's going to be sharing with us today. And he really talks about addressing the psychology of weight, eating, and stress. What does that mean? Well, you know, when you get an idea and you say, you know, oh my gosh, look at that, I just got to have that. That's called psychology. That's the mind, the ego, the wants, and the habits. So today we will just look at all of these different concepts and say, what do I really want out of my body image? What am I willing to put into my mouth? And I will see the results. Dr. Luciani, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us here today.
Well, thank you so much, and I do appreciate being on your show.
Well, Dr. Joe, I'll tell you, don't we think that, you know, this idea of weight and food concept has just been through the mill 100 times and we've shredded it all out and people are just starting to give up in some forms, don't you think?
Well, I absolutely do. And if I could start off with one statistic that kind of sums it up, and there was a study done in England where from the age of 16 to 45, the average woman has been on 61 diets. So I think you're absolutely right. We've been going down this highway, this yo-yo highway, for a long time.
You know, and I think it really has a lot to do with history. If we look at the age group you just referenced, if you look a little bit older, it's for people that grew up in 50s and 60s like myself. And then it came about that fast food came out and, you know, this quick eating and I've got to be everything to everybody and everything came around in the 70s and 80s. And gosh, 90s, forget it. We don't even want to go there, you know. So I really, people are kind of getting the short end of the stick in the way because they believe that, you know, their peer groups, the society is really pressuring them to be more, do more, experience more, you know? And how can you even think about food when you've got all these other things on your plate?
Well, I absolutely, totally agree with you. In fact, I have 2 grown children. They both live in Manhattan. And I don't know the name of the app, but they have this app, and you go on the app, and there's a menu, and you click, click, click. You pay, you actually pay the tip, and within 5 to 10 minutes, it's at your door, and you name it, it's there.
Yeah.
It has become so easy to fall off that health wagon that it's just something that I think plays against us all the time.
You know, I live here in the Deep South. I live in New Orleans, and there's billboards everywhere in town that says, we do not eat to live. We live to eat. And that's, I think, is definitely the concept, don't you believe?
Well, Socrates would be turning over in his grave because, you're just hitting the nail on the head. And we've, but you know, but the other side of that fence is that we're starting to grow weary of the constant serial dieting. And I think as a society, we've maybe reached a pendulum point. Each time we go on a diet, like now with New Year and 80% of all resolutions fall off the cliff by February 1st, what we're getting tired with is realizing that we're failing over and over. Sure, we lose weight for a little bit, but that's about the size of it. Then we're right back to where we were. So I think that the cereal dieting has finally reached a peak where people are just, we're looking for magic, yes, but we're not yet convinced that there is no magic.
You know, I've always looked at the holidays all the time in my own life, and I always would, you know, our thoughts and our expectations and our hope, I guess, and our faith would kind of like crescendo. It would really escalate just before the holidays. Everybody would feel good, and, you know, the warm colors and the comfy hot chocolate and the fireplace and all those other images would really cheer in our mind of the good times, the memories, the positive aspects. And I think when we start to take that stuff down after the holidays, and what we're left with is what I call our exposed self, is that we weren't all those things, and now those are gone away. So we're kind of left exposed, and we're saying, I'm not good enough as I am anymore. I have to fix me. And I think that's where the creation of these January, what we would call resolutions or whatever you want to call them, it really has had started from.
That's right. And, you know, it's, I guess I see it as a form of denial that we kind of, in our bacchanalian ways, we get through the holidays, and then we come out of the holidays and we say, tomorrow I'm joining the gym, tomorrow I'm running a marathon.
Yeah.
What we're really doing is we're giving ourselves kind of an out. We're saying, you know what, I'm going to take responsibility, and all that's behind me now, and I'm going to change my life. Well, that's fine intentionally. But the fact is that our intentions often fall far short of our actual behaviors. And I think that's what's important, is that you can have all the intentions in the world to lose weight. You can go on any diet you want and lose weight, but unless you change your mind, I call it mind over mouth. Mm-hmm. Unless you change your mind, the habits aren't going away.
And I think sometimes people look at habits and they say, oh, I don't have a habit. And then I would say to them, well, you know, if you're on your way home and you know you have to do something after work and you've got two other things scheduled, your habit is to sit there, as you said, on your cell phone, order food that'll be at your door when you get there. That's a habit. That is an action. That is a reflex. You know, and people say, oh, is that a habit? I'm just doing something that I have to do. So I think reframing the way we look at, you know, what we're doing, what we're thinking, is really what it's all about, because people don't want to give responsibility to their actions. They just kind of want to say, I'm going with the flow, don't you think?
Oh, sure. You know, and it's, I say there are three enemies to weight loss and lifelong weight mastery. They're adverse circumstances, harmful emotions, and destructive habits. And I think that we are so mindless that we go through life using food as self-medication to sedate that stress from our circumstances, from our frustrations, from our harmful emotions like depression, moodiness, irritability. Mm-hmm. Even boredom, and that's an emotion, because boredom creates stress. And in order to fill that void, we go to our comfort food. And, of course, the habits, whether it be watching TV in front of while we eat, or worrying and ruminating, which can become habits. So we tend to run to food in order to escape that which we are not handling very well.
You know, it's the funniest thing, because people would say, oh, my gosh, you're in a bad mood. You must need to eat. Those phrases I think, you know, I mean, I'm going to blame the medical community. Hey, I'm part of it. I'm a naturopathic physician. I've been in healthcare for over 45 years. I blame the healthcare for saying that, because what they've done is they've now created a monster, you know. In other words, they've given you leeway to say, oh, it's okay, you must just have low sugar, go ahead and eat, you know. And that's an excuse for your bad behavior sometimes, you know. And I don't think, I think we've come to a place where it's so easy to just say, well, I'm going to remedy that by eating. And the idea of, well, I think a long time used to be called self-sacrifice, but now it's really called resilience. It's really called, what are you willing to do for yourself in lieu of what you think others have kind of taught or said you should be, or all of those things outside of yourself. In other words, can you stand up straight? Can you be proud? Can you be respectful? Can you be in your own power? Can you say no? And so many say no, and then they turn into the victim. Definitely the circle of viciousness that you described in your book, which is the book again is Thin From Within, because inside that book it says, you know, all of these aspects are things that go round and round in our head, right?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier, you know, about self-image. One of the things about, you know, I'm more concerned, like I said earlier, you can lose weight. Diets do work. They do work, but they don't really change anything. But for lifelong weight mastery, something else is needed, and that's motivation. And you're not going to motivate yourself by looking in the mirror and saying, I'm fat, I can't stand me. That is destructive. We need to encourage ourselves. We need to see ourselves not as a fixed snapshot of someone who needs to lose weight, but as a streaming video. We need to realize that we are in process. And if our intentions stay focused, we are on the path of becoming that which we feel is important. So to encourage yourself is critical in keeping that motivation going. You know, motivation and optimism, that's the gas pedal. Pessimism and destructive thinking, that's the brake pedal.
And also, too, the idea that, you know, the food is the enemy. People think of that all the time, and that they have to be a victim of it. How many times have we ever gone out with people and they say, oh, we can't go there because she can't eat that food. Oh, we have to sit here and put up with watching her moan and groan about her food choices. You know, we've all done that. We've done it, and we've heard other people doing it, right?
Well, you know, one of the reasons I wrote this book was because of heart health reasons. To avoid invasive surgery, I was given a choice to change my life dramatically or to have a stent. I chose to change my life. I went on a vegan diet, which is very limited from what I was used to growing up Italian. And I had to really just go to fruits and vegetables. Now, I have to say to you, I did feel like that victim. As you were talking, that's exactly, food was my enemy. But, and here's the important but, that's because of my withdrawal. And as I began to stay the course, I realized that these feelings of being kind of victimized by food and deprivation, these are transient. If you're willing to take the responsibility to handle some discomfort and recognize that that's an essential step toward liberation, then in all maturity and all responsibility, we are capable of getting to the other side of the fence. I no longer feel victimized. I no longer feel that food is the enemy. Quite the contrary. Those foods, even though they would taste great, they've become neutralized in my mind. They don't torment me. I don't miss them. I would love them if I ate them, but I don't need to.
Right. And you know what I think, too? And so many people, I've worked with a lot of families with children that had autism, the idea of, oh, my gosh, you mean I have to give up the birthday cake? And I say to them, you know, we haven't had birthday cakes in our family, you know, with my kids. They just weren't into sugar, you know. And we would, on the holidays, you know, birthdays or whatever, we would go someplace. You know, I can remember when the kids were real little, it was a Christmas gift in the late 90s. If they got, they would get a box of cereal. that was like something crazy, like maybe Fruit Loops or one of those other things, because they had never had those before. It wasn't in their ritual. And they got them, you know, as a gift for Christmas. I thought it was really cool. Well, that kind of even waded away because they're like, you know, we don't want that stuff anymore, you know? And well, I think the idea, just as you said about Italian, that's something that we have really saw. We saw that the Italians eat pasta because that is what they had in their area. That is the food that was cultivated in that. In other words, like I'm Irish, okay? We have potatoes. Polish, you know, we have also the root vegetables and things. Italians have pasta. Is that something that it can be changed? In other words, just because you're Italian does not mean your genes of your body are screaming pasta. Do you know what I mean? It's something that society and people have put on us. It's not what is inside of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no question you're correct. I also, because of heart health, I had high triglycerides, which I couldn't control.
Right.
And I eliminated wheat, all wheat, which means pasta, Italian bread, all that good stuff. I have found that discipline through effort, which is why I wanted to write this book, because I had to struggle with all of those impulses, those compulsions, and I had to find a way to get to the other side. And you are absolutely correct that these are not born and genetic tendencies. These are acquired tendencies. It doesn't feel that way when you're going through the withdrawal of changing your whole mind and your whole body and physiology to these foods. But in time, what happens, just like a cigarette smoker will tell you or an alcoholic, in times what happens is that you start to adapt to the new life. But you have to be careful because I'm a former smoker. I stopped in 1976. Could I have a cigarette right now? Probably. But why in the world would I want to probably chance that? So, yeah, I could eat sugar, I could eat meat right now, but why would I want to take a chance to reawaken all of those impulses?
Yeah, and it's almost like, why, you're right, why would you want to awaken? In other words, you have learned that those things don't have power over you, that you have power over your choices, which is really important. And everybody has these things inside of them. And I think my greatest exercise, and I do this randomly, before the holidays, I went down the baking aisle in the store, which I never go down because I don't bake. And I said, oh, chocolate chip cookies, you know, at Christmas time. And I used to make those in the past, like in the 70s and the 80s. And then I waned away from it. And everything in my basket to make them. And I said, oh, hey, one batch is not enough. I got to make two. So I got enough to make two batches, right? Put everything in the basket. I walked up and down the aisle looking at the other things that were there. Walked around the store, got what I needed. And I said, you know what? I really don't feel like making those. They're really not going to, I just don't feel like eating them. I went back to the aisle, put everything back, and then checked out. It didn't have the power over me to be able to pay for them, take them home, make them, and eat them. But it did have the power over me that it brought up that memory or that emotion. And then I worked through it and just kind of didn't pay attention to it. So my impulse was still there to put it in the basket, but it was also there that my choice was to put it back.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are 12-step programs for eating that say you are powerless over food. From my self-coaching perspective, I say that's true, but I would say you are relatively powerless over certain foods, especially foods that you may have become addicted to, and food addictions are real, but you are never truly powerless, as you demonstrated in your shopping. If you're about to eat a big hunk of chocolate and a police car comes outside with the lights flashing and sirens going, you're going to put the chocolate down and run to the door. So you had some ability to step apart. I guess my point is that we're never truly powerless, even though it feels that we're powerless. Feelings are not facts, and that's important to understand. You can't always trust your feelings when you're dealing with the compulsivity of food or the withdrawal from toxic foods.
And so how do you say to people, I'm really, you know, let me tell you, I deal with number one, Louisiana is the number one unhealthiest state in the nation. You don't want to know what goes on here. But people say, I have to have it. I want to eat what I want to eat. And I even had a diabetic recently that said, oh, my gosh, the doctor said I have to take these drugs because I have diabetes. So they sit down and take two metformin, and I said, what are you going to have for lunch? And they'll say, oh, I'm going to finish this chocolate pie that's here. So how do you take someone that says, you know, hey, this is my life. You know, this is what I know, how to transform that.
Yeah, the most important thing is, first of all, there needs to be an awareness, a critical awareness, and there needs to be some hope and some optimism about being able to do what you need to do. What happens is that most people get knocked down so many times by their failed efforts, by their yo-yo dieting, that they've come to really distrust their ability to do what maybe they know they should be doing. So one of the things that I felt was very important in writing The Psychology of Losing Weight was to really talk about how to cultivate an optimistic attitude, a tenacious attitude, an attitude where you can really be tough with, you know, the compulsive feelings, the urges, the inclinations to run to that comfort food. It's a muscle, and that's the way to look at it. Now, maybe your muscle has atrophied, but we all know, like from physical therapy, if you exercise a muscle, if you give it some strength over time, what happens is that muscle grows. So, and like you were saying before about genetics, we're not born with self-discipline. This is also an acquired trait. So if you've had failure after failure, that doesn't mean you can't succeed. It only means that your self-discipline muscle has atrophied. So you need to be encouraged to build that muscle with exercises, with strengthening, just little successes that you begin to realize I can instead of I can't. So as we start building confidence in ourselves, that's motivating. As you motivate and take that next step, the muscle gets stronger and stronger. And ultimately, you reach a point, as I did with my vegan diet, you reach a point where the struggle gets replaced with this calm, neutral place where all of a sudden you're no longer tormented by the dissatisfaction and pessimism.
So let's talk for a second. I think we can equate this sometimes to exercise. When people say, I'm going to go out and I'm going to exercise every single day, they do it for 2 or 3 days, and on the fourth day it rains. On the fifth day, it's freezing cold out. On the sixth day, oh, well, hey, that's the weekend. We just don't do anything on a weekend. And we're right back to Monday again. And people say, look at it and say, but. You know, that justification, that exception, that there are always exceptions to the rule. And I think sometimes when you come back on that other Monday is to recognize some of your exceptions and some of your justifications. And each day, as your book had indicated, is to write those things down. Write down, I didn't exercise today because it's raining, because I wanted to go out because it was a weekend. And then when you come up on the next week, say, I see all of those things, the exceptions and the judgments I place on it, and I'm going to accept that those were failures, and I'm going to accept that I can change my failures, and I will have a different week. And then maybe if it rains on Thursday, you say, it's raining in the morning, maybe I can go out in the afternoon. So slowly, those things will start to change, right?
Absolutely. Keeping a journal, there are ample statistics that show that people that are trying to lose weight that keep a journal will lose twice as much weight as someone who doesn't keep a journal. So we ask the question, why is this? Well, because by keeping a journal, you're more accountable for your actions. You could make emotional connections. You could monitor your progress. You could assess addictive foods. You see, what's important is that you realize that we have 150,000 different ways we can sabotage our intentions. But when you write it in a journal and read it, it kind of confronts you with a different reality, a more objective reality of just how much you're deluding yourself.
Right. And also, too, the idea when you're writing something down, as we think about our bodies, your mind has to think about it. You're writing it down with your hand. It's cementing it into your mental process, whereas it's just a fleeting thought, usually, comes and goes in 1 second. Whereas when you're sitting and down journaling it, you're actually doing an action and a process. So your brain is recognizing that. And it's also there on the page so you can see it. All of these things tend to cement into your mind, you know, that, hey, maybe I need to look at this again. Whereas if you had a fleeting thought, how many times, oh gosh, I do this a zillion times a day. I don't remember what I had for breakfast. I don't remember what I said 2 minutes ago. And don't ask me what I was supposed to do because I came to the store for something, right?
Yeah, and that's really the case, is because the fleeting thoughts, we have a hard time seeing ourselves objectively, and thoughts can occur kind of just below the threshold of consciousness. You know, sometimes these reflexes, you know, the need to really, I call it mind tasting. Sometimes, you know, we'll get a piece of chocolate cake in our mind, and we're actually changing our physiology. You know, when we taste something in our mind, our gastric acid, our saliva, insulin, blood sugar, everything gets changed with the thought. So thoughts can have a very profound effect, and especially thoughts that go, as I say, a little bit below that threshold of consciousness. By writing things down, you're changing the equation completely, and you are putting that now in a different part of your brain, because now you're seeing it and reading it. So no longer is this a fleeting thought, but it's a confrontation with yourself. And you know what? If your intentions are to lose weight and to obtain weight mastery, that confrontation is critical because, as you said in the very beginning of the show, it's all about responsibility. And I would add the word maturity. We like to eat like children, don't we? I mean, we like to eat what we want, when we want, and we don't want any limitations. Well, that's eating like an 8-year-old. To eat like an adult means to take responsibility for your body, for your health, for your fitness, and that's something why an objective perception of yourself is so important.
Wow, Dr. Joe, we've really come up on some really great concepts. I think, you know, the idea of being responsible for yourself, and you say, you know, it's time to grow up and grow out and take back your power in your life is what's really all about, is to be able to say, I'm going to take responsibility for the health of this body that I'm carrying around. And in 1 minute, we are going to take a break, a 2-minute break, for our commercial about Cardio Miracle. Cardio Miracle also is really great to be able to take responsibility for our life, to be able to say, I can get up and I can go. And we say, you know, I just don't have any get up and go. So I'd like to share a little bit about Cardio Miracle. This is something I have tried in the past. I've been doing it now for about 45 days, and I found it is helping, and I'm so excited, I think, about the future with this product because it's really just helping me, give me more energy, and maybe you can listen and see if it might work for you.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of Cardio Miracle. Learn more at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
So, Dr. Luciani, don't you think we really have to take responsibility these days? And what's going into our mouth, you have to really feed our body. You know, we can't put it, no longer say that, as you said in the beginning about your potential heart crisis, it's really about taking responsibility and saying, how can I nourish my body instead of just running it through the mill, right?
That's correct. And, you know, I would like to mention that, you know, I have been asked the question. Now, people would say to me, well, you had a strong motivation to change your diet.
Right.
You had some heart health issues. What about me? I just need to lose weight. I don't have that same motivation. Well, the truth is that it is, you go through the same process of handling the compulsions, the urges, you know, those comfort foods, whether it's for heart health reasons or for desire to be more fit and healthy. But the question really is motivation. Again, we always come back to motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Intentions can be sabotaged, as we mentioned earlier, in so many ways. The yes, but, you know, everything after the word but is just really should be thrown out. You know, let's decide what is the rationalization, what is truth. I always say the most important step, I have a technique in the book called self-talk. The first step is separating facts from fictions. And the quickest way to begin doing that is to realize that emotions, I feel like I have to eat, I feel like I need that pasta. Feelings aren't facts. We need to begin by separating facts from fictions. So there are many ways to begin to motivate yourself, but the best way, of course, is to develop critical awareness. You know, you can drive a car at night with the headlights off, but you're going to have a collision. And if you are not aware of your habits, of your mindlessness, you're going to have a collision.
And also, due to that, people are unaware that things are actually going on in their body. Just because they haven't had a crisis, in other words, the red alarm going off on their head, or the doctor is saying, this is your choice. You're at a big, big problem right now. They think nothing of it. They just keep running that car into the wall. You know, it's okay that their blood pressure is a little high. It's okay that their knees hurt. It's all right that they're still taking, you know, Advil 5, 6, 7 times a week. You know, and it's all right that they're popping those, indigestion blockers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
But all of those they look at as simple and no big deal, which you and I both know being in the health field, just give it a little time. You know, it's coming, it's percolating, it's, you know, hey, it's got nowhere else but to go up unless you do something about it. So for those people who say, oh, I just want to lose weight, I would say let's list out top to bottom. Tell me about your body. And what are those symptoms? What are you feeling? What are you holding back with drugs or medications? What are you not addressing? And then say, maybe I really do need to pay attention to what's going in my body and exactly how I'm taking care of myself. So there's a lot of denial going, I think, round the clock, don't you think?
Well, denial is the key word, and I totally agree with that. And I think the reason we go into such denial is because we're trying to protect our ability to not have to change. Is it any different from a drug addict who's trying to just not stop using? You see, we don't want to have to change, and that's part of the problem is because the food itself, you have to almost ask the question, who's steering? Is it me or my habits? And you need to take your life back from those habits. So if food is steering your life, then, of course, you're going to protect that because you really don't want to have to change. So, again, we come back to what I mentioned before, the confrontation with the self. You can tell yourself a lot of things, and you can have a lot of intentions like New Year's resolutions, but you really at some point have to reach a tipping point. And you have to ask yourself, am I really going to do this, or am I just placating myself with more promises? So there's where we go back to the word we keep talking about today, and that's responsibility and maturity. And unless you're willing to really recognize that the enemy, as Sun Tzu said, know your enemy. The enemy in this case, now to quote Pogo, we see the enemy and he is us. So I think that we need to realize that we are either our enemy or we are our ally, and you have to make a choice. That's where the adult comes in, making that choice.
You know, I just saw something this morning, and it said, that voice you hear that says you can't do it, it's a liar. Have faith, be strong. Have faith, be strong, you can. And I think that that's really true, is to believe that you can. And when you say you can't, who is that that's saying you can't? Is it your mother telling you you can't? Is it your peer groups because they want to eat out with you? Is it your husband because he doesn't want you to get skinnier? Is it your kids because they still want to have the same old traditional foods that you've always cooked in the house? So there are a lot of those outside influences that which you believe is part of you. And it is part of you. It's just whether you choose to keep repeating that saga in your head, right?
Yeah, I talk about, you know, the voices in our mind, and I'm not talking about schizophrenia. We have to ask, who's doing the talking? Now, in the case of food and comfort food and various compulsions and or addictions, oftentimes it's not us, but it's the food compulsions, it's the insecurity, it's the food that is really steering the thinking, where you've become, in the backseat, a passive victim of these thoughts. What's necessary is to get up in that front seat and grab the steering wheel. Your life, when you are more or less held hostage by compulsive eating, by destructive eating, food are chemicals. Chemicals, you know, they release dopamine. They make us feel good. We want to go on feeling good. And like any other addict or any other compulsive tendency, there's going to be resistance to stopping that feel-good feeling. But again, that's where the adult has foresight and looks beyond the fence to the other side of the fence.
And you know what, too? I think it's to be a responsible adult. It's also to raise responsible children. The adult does not need to say that my children have to have a birthday cake if you know that sugar should not be something in their diet. You know, stand up and say, we'll do something else. And, you know, this concept of you deserve a treat for what? You know, why does a treat have to be food? Why do you deserve something? You know, I don't know. It's just this idea that for every action, there's an equal reaction, you know? So I don't get that. What are your thoughts?
You wonder why McDonald's puts toys in their Happy Meals. And, you know, this is massive, massive advertising. We associate food with, you know, lots of just different kinds of pleasurable associations. But with our children, I just read an article, I don't know if it's true, and I'll have to verify it, that it takes 3 days to digest a Big Mac and 51 days to digest the trans fats in that hamburger, not to mention the triglycerides, not to mention the sugar in the bun. You know, this is what we're feeding our kids. Now, would you feed your kids cocaine or heroin? As a parent, I think it's important to realize just how powerful and potent and destructive certain foods can be. At least be aware, at least develop some critical awareness. You're not doing your kids a favor by offering them such treats. You're actually setting them up for later in life compulsions and addictions. And these are the habits that are being instilled at the young ages. As parents, you really need to become aware that, you know, this isn't just a way to be nice to your kids. It's a way that you are setting them up for future problems.
How about the idea when they can't wait till they get their first two teeth so that they could chew McDonald's fries? We all see that. I can tell you almost 99.9% across the board, that is a child's first whole food, is McDonald's french fries, you know, because the kid is sitting there screaming, you know, and you know, the answer of, you know, are they screaming? What are they screaming for? You know, I think the idea that people kind of tend to put their ideas, their beliefs, and their habits on their children. Oh, they're screaming, they must be hungry. Oh, they're screaming because they have to have it. Or they're screaming because I have it, now they want it. You know, and it's the idea of, is there any restraint? And I think right there, it shows that first onset of being responsible adults, children, and having restraint and saying, if they're hungry, we'll give them their baby food, you know, that food that, you know, might be mashed up carrots or whatever it is, but they don't need whatever somebody else has just because, you know, just because they're screaming. Because what we're doing is we're really learning is that that's that emotional thing again. That's that I want, I have to have. It's got to resonate with me, and it's going to make me quiet down and feel better. And I think that is truly the core of the beginning of this process that we've had in our life, don't you think?
Sure. And another reason why they're screaming is because they're highly processed, especially high sugar, salt, fat, flour, and wheat, is pleasure-inducing. These kids want to feel that pleasure again. Come on, Mommy, mm-hmm. more fries. Yeah, fries right. make me feel good. The children are screaming, and we're using food to make them happy. How sad. That's why education is important. That's why understanding of the toxicity of certain foods. And it's really a matter of recognizing that even with children that have been on this fast food kick for a while, you can reshape and begin to shape them into a better place. But you as a parent also have to be a model. So your household has to reflect
right.
that new attitude, and the pantry has to reflect that. So I think it's, you know, I had an editor who didn't want to take on this project because she said, you know what, I think people are really looking for magic. They're really not looking to know what they have to do. And
right.
I feel that to some extent she's correct, but I think the pendulum is starting to swing. I think we're realizing that as a society where 33% of people are overweight and 36% are obese, I think we're beginning to realize the magic isn't working. So this is why psychology
yeah.
needs to be injected into this equation.
You know, it's so interesting that you just made that comment because so many people will say to me, you're making my health care my job. I already have a job. I'm not going to do this, you know. And I went, okay, no problem. You know, your health care is what's carrying that body around that you're in. And if you don't take care of it, you won't have a job to go to. You won't have anything else because your body will quit. And yet they still consistently, as you've explained in the book, it's still looking outside of yourself instead of taking care of the vessel in which we reside, right?
Oh, boy, that's the answer right there. It's extrinsic versus intrinsic. You can get a beach
yeah.
body. You can lose the weight for a wedding. It's not going to serve you in the long term unless you really develop that intrinsic inner motivation to realize that it's time. Stop putting it off. Tomorrow is just an excuse. Once you realize that, get rid of the word can't, change the yes buts, change I should. And once you realize that it's time now to motivate yourself, because tomorrow will just come and it'll be another same old. So unless you dig
right.
your heels in right now, it's your life, and you have to decide how important your life is to you.
And also, too, the concept of how long is it going to take? I don't see results really fast. And I think sometimes I say to people, it's going to take as long as it's going to take. And by just saying that, it kind of, you know, if you're in this 100% and you're going to go cold turkey, and yeah, your brain is going to shut down everything and all of your emotions are going to be good. I'm going to box them all up, write them down on a piece of paper and, you know, go outside and burn it, that kind of idea. Well, guess what? It's still there and it's going to take time. And for people to say, I have to see results tomorrow or I can't continue, I think what I would challenge them to listen to is that all of the failures and all the time, day, that something doesn't work out that day, write it down, as you've said in your book, and say, okay, that's something I had not noticed in the past, and that is the thing that I need to look at and reflect on. And it might be that maybe I ate something today I wasn't supposed to, but why did I do that? Did I do that because I didn't feel like cooking. My kids were screaming. My husband's a pain in the neck. I'm overworked. Whatever it might be. And then work on that first before you worry about the food. Because in reality, the places that you have these repeating systems will always be there. It's whether you look at what caused it in the first place and try to work on that. So if you're working too much, say I'm going to carve out, I'm going to put down on those wearable things that everybody's got, and I'm going to say 30 minutes, everything gets shut off, and I'm going to sit down and eat consciously. You know, so really maybe looking at those things and then say, oh, this food didn't make me feel good. Oh, this food isn't really that great. Oh, maybe I wanted something else. Those things will slowly start to change. And, you know, to your book, you know, How to Lose Weight Permanently, it's really about when you say thin from within, it can be a process of years. It can be months. It could be weeks. So not to rush your life change versus you're just losing weight.
Yeah, the key is to keep your motivation and optimism, because you're right. Obviously, it's going to take time. You don't go to the gym and do one curl with a dumbbell and expect your biceps to grow. But in order to go the distance, you need to develop the mindset. You need to develop the optimism, the tenacity. That's why you have to work on changing the mind. It's mind over mouth.
And don't you think that's what keeps it off, is that change that, like I said, you know, if you're changing, I'm going to always have a lunch time, right? Isn't that what's so important? Because then that will keep it off permanently.
Well, the permanent weight loss comes when you are in tune with your intentions. The reason we have serial yo-yo dieting is because we're basically letting food call the shots. Once you have changed who you are from the inside out, then food is no longer the enemy and it's no longer the obstacle. So, you know, I think that, you know, my life has become a testimony to that fact. I've been on this diet about 3 or 4 years now. And I shouldn't even call it a diet. There you go, because diets are finite. They begin and they end. This is my life, and I love my life, and I love my foods, and we have become very creative in cooking and eating and enjoying life with every other aspect there is. So there's no downside to it.
It's really what you're doing is learning how to have intelligent nutrition to support your body. That's what you've done, instead of saying, this is just something that I'm putting in because someone else is telling me, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course, yes.
And I think, you know, the concept of being more in touch with your body, really that's what you're teaching also in this book, is how do I feel? What in my body is hurting? Like, in other words, am I starving? Am I not? And how to identify that? Are you really hungry? Or are you just mindlessly eating, right?
Oh, boy, that is so important. You know, awareness, like you say, am I hungry? Well, also ask, am I bored? Am I stressed? Am I depressed? Am I anxious? Am I lonely? Am I fatigued? These are the culprits that come in from the underneath up, and they can grab you, but with critical awareness, it's like I said before, it's the car with the headlights. You're aware of these impulses, and basically you know when you're more vulnerable. You know when you're susceptible. So at first, when you're starting to change your habits, it's really important to have this awareness, because without awareness, of course, you are at the mercy of impulse. But awareness always, always, always allows you to have choice. And that's critical, because in those moments of ambivalence, you know, with the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other, until you reach that tipping point, you haven't capitulated, but until you put that food into your mouth, there's always a choice up to that point. So awareness gives you the edge. It gives you the edge to really understand that, you know, I'm really in jeopardy right now of falling prey to these foods. Maybe you need to get up and distract yourself. Maybe you need to just take a glass of water. But awareness is critical in getting you away from those initial battles that have tripped you up time and time again. We really need that consciousness.
Well, Dr. Joe, just in closing, we have about 4 or 5 more minutes. Could we talk about the hypothalamus and about the physical things that go on in your body? Because people say, no, my body says it's hungry. You can hear my stomach growling. Can't you see? I'm getting ready to faint. Or, don't you see, my hands are shaking. So can you share a little bit about how those barriers, you know, people, you can get through and how you can look at them in a different mindset?
Yes, there are various chemicals in the body, the hunger hormones, that satiety hormones that make us allow us to feel that we've had enough. One that's particularly important, obestatin, which tells the hypothalamus, the brain, that we are satisfied. It takes about 20 minutes for the food to transit from the stomach to the intestines for obestatin to be released. And what's important about that is that if you shovel food into your mouth, if you're a volume fast eater, your brain's not going to know it's had enough to eat before you get to that second or third helping. So it's really important to slow down the eating process. I suggest a technique I call the egg timing technique. When you eat, see how, you know, to take your portion that you're setting out in front of you and just eat that portion. Now, in this experiment, you're allowed to eat more, but you have to wait at least 15 or 20 minutes. Then you can go back if you're still hungry. You need to wait until you start to realize, get up and do the dishes, do something, but you'll realize in that 15 or 20 minutes that things change, that ravenous, compulsive feeling to go toward food has now shifted to, it would taste good, but you know what, I don't really need it. So let's say it takes you 15 minutes to do that. Next time you eat, set a timer for 15 minutes, finish your portion, and then you wait until that timer goes off before you have anything else. Most of the time, you'll realize you don't need to go back for something else. So we do have satiety hormones, you know, leptin and PYY, various hormones that tell us that we've had enough. But we also have the hormones that tell us that we're hungry, ghrelin, for example, neuropeptide Y. We are very efficient because of our ancestry, you know, our cave people ancestry, where we had to have food in order to survive, especially high caloric food. So there are very strong inclinations, especially for glucose and to keep the body going and fueled. And oftentimes we are at war with the psychology and the physiology of the body. And that's why it's important to really recognize that, you know, what is true hunger and what is false hunger. And false hunger, in my estimation, is triggered by the psychology, by your enemies, stressful emotions, habits, and circumstances, whereas physiological hunger is driven more by the physiological contractions of the stomach and intestines. So you need to really be more objective, and you need to become more connected to what's going on in your body, and always trying to make a differentiation. Is it my body that I'm feeling hunger, or is it my mind? Most of the time with mindless eating, let's be honest, it has nothing to do with hunger. We are an overweight society, and hunger is typically not driving our difficulties. So I think it's important to realize that aside from the hunger hormones, there's also the dopamine release and caused by the
right.
pleasure centers in the brain. So sometimes it's a matter of just pleasure and not the false hunger. We're just looking for the high connected to the foods. You know, when you see a gooey dessert pass you by in a restaurant and you get into that mind tasting, you know, you're one step away from really going for that, and it has nothing to do with hunger at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Joe, I think we've really spent a lot of time today on many of the concepts people are struggling with. And I won't say just in the beginning of the year, I will say all year long. I think people really have said, you know, they've had ups and downs and failures and successes, and really haven't, what many people would say, conquer the food concept, you know. And I think your book is really, it sheds a lot of light on something different to say, you know what, let's figure out why your hand to mouth is all about it and what's your brain saying that's reaching out. And really, that's what you're talking about today, is really to look at yourself. So really, thank you so much for joining us today, because I think you've really put a different light on it.
Well, thank you. It's been a wonderful interview, and I appreciate all the kind words.
Well, Dr. Joe, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your program and your book? That would be great.
Sure. You can go to my website. It's www.selfcoaching.net. Facebook, it's Dr. Joe Luciani, self-coaching. And I do daily blogs and weight loss tips, and also on Twitter, self-coaching 101.
Well, Dr. Joe, it is an absolute pleasure to have you with us, and I just thank you for all your kind words. I think the listeners will really find some more information to say, you know, I got to do something differently. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too. Take care now.
Thanks. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Joe Luciani, again, his book is Thin From Within, The Powerful Self-Coaching Program for Permanent Weight Loss. His link is on the bottom of today's show page. It is selfcoaching.net. Please do check it out for more information. And, you know, many times when you're trying to make a health choice or change something in your life, you say, oh, man, I just don't want to do that, you know. You look at it and you say, well, I'm going to withhold it for a second and see what happens. And then you stamp and you stomp her and you say, oh, my gosh, I don't want to do that. I can't do that. Some of those other things that are in your head and your mind might decide to come up and you'll say, oh, gosh, that's why I don't want to eat that. So we can make choices in our life. Please do check out also my website, which is mypersonaladvocate2.com, and the link is on the bottom of today's show page. If you're really faced with a lot of health challenges right now, we're really talking about the same thing. Something isn't working. I've got to change something. And how can I do that? So please do check it out. Thank you for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It was an absolute pleasure to have you with us. And have a great day.